Alright. I'm talking with Mike Meadows Jr. Mike Meadows, yeah. And so this is, we are at 2137 West First Avenue, and you have to tell me your date of birth.
I was born on August 28th, 1949, in sunny London, England.
Ah, interesting.
Well, so some interest to you, too.
Oh, sure. And,
and I'm a Canadian citizen.
You're an American. Good. Important. And you grew up at where?
I grew up in Richmond and Twickenham in England until I was seven.
Uh-huh.
Then, pretty much, and then moved to Canada. I grew up on the university campus at UBC for 3 years until summer of 59, and moved to my parents' present place down at 49th in Collingwood, 3507 West 49.
Uh-huh.
And then from there, so I lived there. We went to Boston for a year in 1965-6. And then I've been in Vancouver on and off, mainly on, but sometimes off since then.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
What, okay, do I know? What else do I need to know? Okay, well, we have to keep it as close to Dunbar as we can.
Yeah, of course,
so that's
of course.
What it's all about. And when I'll just start off to ask you maybe what you remember about growing up in Dunbar. Let's see, how old were you then? Where were you going to school when you...
Okay, when I moved from the university camp, because that's not Dunbar, right?
Yeah.
Okay, from the university camp, moved down to 49th and Collingwood. That is sort of Dunbar.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went to Southlands Elementary School for 2 years.
All right.
Grade 5 and grade 6. Do you want to hear about that, or should I just give you an overview?
Overview. What impressed you about it and your mentors and all that stuff?
Okay, then after grade 6, I went to Lord Bing for grade 7, 8, that was junior high. And I stayed there for most of my high school years. So that's Lord Bing, that's sort of Dunbar, too.
Yeah, right. It's very nice.
Okay. What I remember is the house being kind of appalled.
Yeah, right.
When I first saw it, it was interesting, but it was, I mean, it was a little nowhere back in those days. I don't know if the roof was paved. It had these drainage ditches on either side of it. And apart from, you know, really, really rural areas like Richmond, I've never seen drainage ditches, uncovered green drainage ditches. Uh-huh. That's some red sediment.
Red sediment?
Yeah, got a ready orange sediment. Very, very strange. And my parents' place, when I actually bought, had a septic tank or two, I think. One for like black water, one for gray water.
Oh.
Gray water one, that's like washing machine and stuff. That one had quite a personal area. It had like a peach tree growing beside the house there. Okay, so that's the house. Then the grounds, I remember when they moved in, the grass was incredibly high because that one, to me, it seemed high. I mean, I guess it wasn't that high, but it was way past my knees, for instance. And so, well, man bent the scythe to do the whole yard.
Oh, my God.
And that's a good third of an acre, anyway, so that's a lot of
oh,
lawn.
Yes.
I'm probably not being specific enough.
No, keep going. This is the kind of thing.
Okay. What was nice about the place, though, was that it really was cut off. It was nowhere. I mean, the guy who had his house on 47th, must be, 47th, the corner house, 47th, Collingwood. He owned the land down to my parents' place, basically. There's no lane there, there's no 48th Avenue, and it went right over to almost to Dunbar. So that was a big tract of land. That was all, of course, trees, just bushes and stuff. And I can remember, this is perhaps jumping around a little bit, but I remember when I started playing there, you know, when I moved in, I started exploring the area behind me, then came across this, sort of like a, not like a tree fort, but almost like some kids, I guess, from a long time ago. This must be about the fourth house west on 49th. So it's a big old place, at least at the age of my parents' place, but it had been there all the time. It's abandoned at that point. And in the backyard, it was kind of like someone had set up fairly elaborate trolley system,
okay.
like overhead trolley system. So like a like a big sort of wooden container with wheels, like clothesline type wheels, and then a heavy, heavy clothesline. So that went off, I don't know, maybe 50 feet or so. So you could play in that and go back and forth. And some guy that was like a rubbish heap in the back, I remember finding was their blasting caps. Or something.
Oh my!
I thought they were dynamite, but they weren't actually.
Oh yeah, okay.
More like flares, I guess. This is no particular order, unfortunately. So now the golf course side, because the golf course on the other side, on the east side of Collingwood, there is no houses on that side except the 47th, but there was still a couple of old houses as well. Just one or two, maybe only one house on that side, maybe two houses on that side, around 47th. Marine Drive had that big house that's still there. The one on the east side it is. So what happened is that 47th is a speed light, and it's quite low, and then at 49th it's a speed light, also quite low, but in those days the light was slightly west of where it is now, so you couldn't quite see it as you were looking straight down Collingwood, straight south of Collingwood. So if you're a little kid, there's nothing but these huge trees, and no lights,
okay.
No cars, no nothing.
Nothing, where am I?
You might hear noises in the woods as you're walking down.
Yeah.
I mean, it was very, in those days, rural. I mean,
and again, so, the years were...
That'll be 59 by about 61, I think it actually got to be paved. So I'm just describing kind of when I first moved.
Right, what yeah.
Like. Then the drainage just got kind of confined after that. I know they got the sewer actually came.
Yeah, so
the,
there was a Highbury Tunnel?
Before the Highbury Tunnel
was
sewer, all that. I remember...
Another flood?
Oh, well, yeah, of course. I mean, our place flooded all the time.
Oh, yeah, oh, dear.
So, well, I got a pump just for that reason. Let me just pour the tea for a second.
Yeah, okay. At the local, you had this high grass and you had a pulley that you played cars in with.
Right.
And there were these houses.
Okay. When we moved in, quite just after we moved in, my parents had there was a sawdust burner in the basement to keep to heat the house up. It's a big old furnace. And under the front porch, there was a room, a fairly big room, dedicated to holding the sawdust.
Right.
And had a light bulb in it, so you can see what you're doing. So, my parents got the first truckload of sawdust, put in a big truck that came along, with a huge sort of wide hose that they put the sawdust and blow it into the room.
Okay.
Fine. Then it drove away, fine. And then, so we turned the light on, and I was delegated to fill up the hopper. You had to do it every few hours, so I did that.
Oh my goodness.
And, of course, I turned the light off, put a little chain. And then one day, I don't think I was doing it at the time. I think, anyway, the point is the light bulb had gone.
Oh.
And it had just been filled up, so there was a fire.
Oh, yeah.
So my parents hustled. I remember my mother getting me and my two brothers out of the house in a hurry, obviously, because it was on fire. The fire guy showed up. My father's kind of incensed because they smashed everything with axes.
Oh, my God. Oh, no kidding. They didn't care then.
Well, what the hell?
Uh-huh.
It's kind of fun in the environment, I guess, some guys.
Uh-huh.
Make up for the horror. Anyway, so they flooded the whole thing, and from that, then they found the light bulb and all got distorted. All melted in the heat.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's why I had a fire. Mm-hmm. So, my father's answer to that was not to be, more careful, but rather to take the bulb out altogether, so there was no light down there.
Oh,
well, that doesn't matter, but see, if you're 10, then moving to a new neighborhood, and it's rather dark and creepy. It's in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, right.
Got trees and bush. And no neighbors.
Oh, yeah, right.
Around. No lights at night. And you come to this house, and you got to go downstairs and do the sawdust thing. and it's an unfinished basement, and it's in the dark. There's only one bulb that's near the Solis burner itself. So it could get, these are these families of finding body parts inside the sawdust.
Oh my God!
I wasn't terribly keen on doing it, but anyway. I can remember, well, this is not quite for Dunbar, of course. I remember hearing on the radio, my parents weren't here on the radio.
Oh.
I thought I might listen to rock and roll. Uh-huh. But for 1 year we had the radio. It's an old, big, ancient set my father picked up from somewhere. Had a 78 turntable on top, like a big cabin thing, and radio was not beneath it. And we were hearing about some guy bombing a church in America. I thought, like, how strange. I guess that would be the early 60s, the civil rights stuff to start. But how odd, awful. Of course, I come from England, where I used to play the bomb of the areas of Coventry, where my mother's side of the bomb. I guess I grew up partly in Coventry, too. I digress.
That's all right, anyway.
So I'm back, we moved in, we had a small fire. I went to school. Well, it's like a little bit of a hike now, I think about it. Why Southlands? Because I suppose Carousel is a bit more distant.
Yeah.
But I never go to Southlands, so basically straight along Marine Drive, I guess I used to walk west of Marine Drive from, I guess I would go up to Dunbar, whatever, I went over to Dunbar. And then, I guess if I rode my bike, which is most of the time, then I guess I would have gone there. You know, I must have gone by way of Alma. I must have gone on 49 and headed north to 48, then head west, one block to the Redmond's place that they had the house there.
Yeah.
Big enough to have Dunbar, 49, that was days. Then up, I guess it would be Alma. There were hardly any houses there, and there's certainly now that there's a big field there now. I think it's where it must be. I don't remember that.
Yeah,
at all.
That's right. Yeah.
Anyway, I was at school, big deal. But that's where I met. I guess not the first Indian kids I met. I'd met some at the camp that I grew up in, the rest of the camp.
Oh,
they were more like from the north, like Alaska.
Oh, interesting.
For summer school, at least once. I got Bill Thomas and a guy called Bill Reed. You know, those guys. This would be 1958 or so, around there.
That's right.
Now the floor back to Dunbar. So, at Southlands, there's quite a few Indian kids. Comparatively. I've never seen that many. That's okay. And they seemed okay. They got along more or less with me. I didn't really see much of this.
You don't have to go home right after school, I guess.
Yeah, they go a different direction. They went, that's going straight down Crown or Wallace.
Because
I went all the way over to Dunbar. And then.
That's right, yeah, definitely.
Let's see. That's where I learned to play guitar, though, grade 5.
That's right.
My grade 5 teacher, the show was called started. I remember Baby Linda one because she sang. That's another point. You know, it's a lot of kids, Percy and Cyril. Got a fat kid called Glenn. These are the Indian kids.
Mm-hmm.
And for the rest, this guy called Grant. I remember him because he lived up in 38th year. Not Dunbar, but Alma, I guess it must be.
Oh.
And he must be like a younger son because his older brothers had, Elvis Presley 78s on the basement walls.
Oh, thank you.
So this would be 1960 by then, I suppose, grade 6. Played the school band. There was a school band in 1950. That's right, grade 5.
Mm-hmm.
That was this Miss Stetzel, named Mrs. Burgess.
Okay.
Apparently they hadn't had one before that, and I don't know, I guess it was that one after that, but that was the first one that had it. Ask me some more questions.
Okay, so um, you you got interested in music and because your parents were, or because you just, you know, heard something on the radio, or because your friends were doing different stuff, or what?
Well, I guess I got interested in music because my parents were musical in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So I just sort of, without any thinking, drifted into it. Mm-hmm. Like, remember, like when they had their car, and even with an MG, there's a sort of big stump in the back, and it's kind of vertical. I just sort of sing away from the wind, because I couldn't hear myself except just through my ears, because the wind would press the back. Then we came to Canada, two Morris Minors, a black one in 57. We drove down to San Francisco.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, it was a horrible trip because,
oh, yeah.
I mean, that's back in the days of American cars with big engines.
Oh, I know.
Well, this horrible
big
race.
All around you.
I know.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Well, it was great. You know, it's understandable. So I remember because the roads were quite narrow, this big, before the big highways.
Yeah.
So, anytime it was a hill, we had a huge lineup behind us.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Exactly. Oh, dear.
Anyway, but the point is, I used to stick my head out the window and sing along to myself.
Oh, yeah.
So, so I got into some music. And then they bought a guitar for me, which I didn't play, though. They got it when we were still at the camp, probably about 57, that's the same, same year. A guy called Chris Jordan.
Oh, yeah.
He changed his name to Robert Gordon.
That's right, yeah.
He was a salesman then.
Uh-huh.
And, I think anyway. And, that was some at Seymour Music. It was down on opposite Seymour Street.
Yeah.
Close to, Dunsmuir, I guess it was more Pender between those two streets.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, oh yeah, so the guitar, it sort of sat around doing nothing. But then, this is in grade five, my teacher started a little orchestra and a band, and she was got everyone playing ukulele, this is what happened.
Okay.
And I was one of the ones who did fairly well with it. And I started teaching the other kids ukulele. And then we ran a ukulele so that she said she had a guitar. She showed me how to play the guitar because I said I had one. So I brought mine in, she showed me how to play it, and then I played it for the rest of the year.
Oh, pretty amazing.
Yeah, she was a pretty musical person. Then, but I must admit, the reason I played guitar in particular was because I wanted to meet girls.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah,
that's a good reason to do that.
Yeah, that's a good reason.
And it worked, I guess.
Yeah, that's good.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so after grade six, I went working. And maybe 1961, I guess. So I used to ride my bike to school. I'm not sure even now why I went to Irving rather than Point Grey, but that's what I went. I guess because I had requested a transfer, thinking back on it, because my friends from the camp had all gone to, you know, UBC. They moved to places in Point Grey, the area of Point Grey, that is. Mm-hmm. So they all went to Bing.
Okay.
So I thought, well, I should ride a bike too. So I did. So I used to ride my bike. I'd go up north on 49, north on Collingwood, the top of the hill, across the Marine Drive, and walk some steps there.
Right, yeah.
To Collingwood Place, I guess it is.
Oh.
And then I used to ride along there to 33rd, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
No, about 35th. The 35th up Collingwood, because this is the flat, flattest route I can find. Then head west one block to Dunbar and go north on Dunbar 2 blocks at 33rd. Then right at the corner of Dunbar 33rd, that's where the playing field starts for the community center, the report was extended. And then you should cut diagonally across the field there to have this like woods, must be from about 34th. Go through the woods on a trail and end up at Highbury, I think. Is that possible? Yeah, it must be.
They had a Crown or Wallace.
No, not that far.
Just
to somewhere around Highbury.
Okay.
And head up there to about, where did I go? 26 or so, up the hill there, and then down to Wallace, I guess, eventually. To Lincoln.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I come back a slightly different route because I go up Highbury, I think, to 26, then over to Dunbar, then straight down Dunbar Hill. That was the most fun.
Yeah.
Um, God, I remember getting my first 45 as a record. This place, I can't remember the name of it. I think it's Morton Gale, but Morton Gale. I could be wrong. I may not have the name of it. It's a TV repair place, and I sold records. Now, that was on the west side of Dunbar Street.
Oh.
So it may not be Morton Gale, but that's what it was called. Between 26 and 27. And all I remember really about it, the store, is, you know, average-sized store. Didn't have a great stock of records. I ordered my first Shadows record there. That's what I remember. But the guy, the sales guy, I suppose looking back on it now, he had something wrong with him because he mumbled just ferociously.
Okay.
I couldn't understand a word he said.
Okay.
I suppose he had an impediment, I don't know. Anyway, I got my first record. It was called Teen Prayer. There you are, 45. Just a random. Yeah, it's kind of neat. And I traded that later when I went to England in 1962, must have been, when my parents went back for the first time since they came to Canada for a short vacation. And I traded that 45 to my uncle. No, to my aunt, I should say. Aunt Kay. She had the Shadows 45 Apache. That's a big deal back in those days. And I brought that one back. Anyway, that was the guy at Morton Gale, wherever he was. Another guy was a barber, so that would be, well, somewhat interesting story. This would be 1961, grade 6, I guess it must be still. I get my every so often, my mother looking at me, my haircut, say, twice a year. And I went to the local barber. He had a place at 41st and Dunbar. On the, it would be the northeast corner. There's a drugstore right on the corner,
right.
And then it was about two stores north or so.
Right, so it was on Dunbar.
Yeah, on Dunbar.
Yeah. Okay.
And sort of French Canadian-ish looking sort of guy, curly
right.
Hair. Yeah, I wish it's good use, I guess. Anyway, went there one day and he says, have you ever thought of modeling? And I thought, well, that's interesting because had these photographs of, you know, guys with their haircuts and all.
Oh, yeah.
Just put up in the window of the lots. Sure, why not?
Okay.
And didn't say anything about that after that. Then came back in another time. The next time I was there, I said, so what about this modeling stuff? And at that point, our neighbors, he was Renzinger, Mrs. Renzinger, her kid over there, get their haircut. And he climbed up. I didn't want to talk about modeling. I suspect, looking back on it, he was propositioning.
Yeah, right. Yes, I'll bet he was. Yeah, interesting.
Then he moved his shop to the west side of Dunbar shortly after that. And then eventually he disappeared.
Okay.
I was a bit naive. I didn't quite know what he was getting at.
Interesting.
So these are the Dunbar characters. I don't remember his name or anything.
Yeah.
For me, a highlight was a little later. I'm skipping around here.
That's okay.
I must have been 13. It's in grade 8, so that would be 1963-ish.
Uh-huh.
My parents had raised my allowance to 25 cents a week.
Yeah, right.
They're completely erratic, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so finally I said, wow, it's a great little cafe. So I went and got a hamburger, a mushroom burger, actually.
Oh.
There's a place on 20, what's this place like? Is it 29? Is it the Dunbar Live at 29?
Yeah, that's quite right now.
Okay. Then it'll be on the northeast corner-ish.
Okay.
Not right on the corner, though. There's like a little mall there now. There used to be, among other things, there's sort of a Canadian-Chinese restaurant there.
Right.
They made hamburgers, but I have to do it. The first time on my own, I went up and got a hamburger.
Oh, wow.
Wow, it's a big deal to me.
Of course.
My mother wasn't very keen on store-bought stuff. I'm not quite sure why. I'm not sure why it was around the nutrition or around the expense.
Yeah, probably more the latter.
Well, she had a few odd ideas. She felt like slip-on shoes would be disastrous for me.
Oh, I
did. So I'll have to wear slip-on shoes for a while.
And
eventually I got my own place. I got the slip-on shoes. And of course, what I can remember most impressed about was there's a store, well, it was a storefront, I should say. It'd be on 20, between 27 and 28, and it was on the west side, and the front of the store was at a sort of diagonal to the street, and it's called, at that particular incarnation of the store, it's called the Question Mark. It's like a vegan coffee shop.
Oh,
this
is good. Okay, we got
some. So this would be, I'm with, that's about 14 by now, so about 63, 64. Oh. Well, it might have been earlier still, but it was somewhere out there. I don't think it lasted very long, but there it was. I've never seen a couple of beatniks go in there.
Yeah, what did they look like?
Well, I don't remember much, except that the woman had striped, quite tight striped pants, like black and white stripes, I guess. The guy just missed her picture of bum going in. I don't really remember. I mean, maybe sandals, but I don't remember.
What was the hairdo like for a beatnik? I mean, was there a special one?
Well, I think just a ponytail, but it's so big.
Yeah,
well, it's just a glimpse.
Yeah.
Can't be more specific, unfortunately.
That's okay.
Ask me more questions. I don't.
Okay. We heard about, but I guess it was over by then, there was a beatnik hamburger joint called the Black Swan.
Right.
Did you know that one?
The name?
Where the poets came and read it.
Yeah, the, maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
Maybe you're thinking of that.
Maybe it wasn't the Question Mark.
Maybe it was the Black Spot.
That could be.
Okay.
It's the same sort of general location?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that must be it then. Yeah. That was, across the alley from that, what's now a sort of a, used to be the Italian delicacy.
Yeah, right there.
Well, that must be it, of course.
That must have been.
Can't be two of them.
No, it can't be two of them. Yeah, that was a beaten hangout.
Okay.
We talked to the guy who actually ran it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Good, he's still around. Good for him.
Yeah.
Good. I can remember the airport must have expanded a hell of a lot because back when I used to ride my bike straight down Dunbar from the hill of 26, I mean, that's just a spectacular free ride because it's all downhill, right?
Yeah.
You couldn't see like way out beyond the Fraser in those days. I mean, it's like, I don't know, trees, I guess. That's probably what they used to. Well, there was some trees out there too. Like, and that's all been obviously gone. I mean, there's these huge flat areas for the airport. I can get out somewhere. Gosh, what do I remember? Dunbar. A Halloween. Remember, I must have been grade 7. So I'd be 62. Oh, times 61, it would have been fall of 61. For Halloween there. What about the Community Center? A bit in the evening. And there's always talk about Dunbar. Riots and stuff.
Yeah, the Denver gang.
Well, big deal. It was just a bunch of toilet rolls in the trees.
Right.
The whole mess of kids hanging around, but I don't remember much happening. It would have been around the community center up to the shopping district on Dunbar, though. As opposed to, say, like down around 16th. I don't remember anything happening down there.
That's where some of the gang lived, actually, down
at 16th. Yeah, I'm sure they did, but. Cyril Sexton. I just remember some of the names of those guys. But they're all much bigger kids than me. Like I was grade 7, they'd be grade 10 or 12.
I see.
Okay, ask me a question.
Ask me a question, yeah. So we had, heard that the Dunbar gang, smashed windows and did all kinds of awful things. I just wondered if you remembered anything of that.
Not really. The next best thing to that is, well, two things. First is, you're gonna fight. There's a store called the Ship to Shore, a little confectionery store on 16th between Wallace and Highbury, I guess it must have been. It's called the Ship to Shore. You say, Ship to Shore, quarter to four.
Oh.
Apparently.
Ship to Shore, quarter to four?
Yeah. Either a B-square or worse effect, but that was, and that supposedly there'd be a big rumble. I've never seen two up there, up front there, but that's
not really.
And not much happened, of course, but there's a little sort of Chinese place, and they sell maybe pot and stuff.
Right, still be.
That's still do.
Yeah.
Okay. The other thing that's not quite like that, but there's a rumor at one point, there's a girl called Mona. The rumor is that she was like a prostitute in Bingo. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's true.
Well, they did have some at Queen Elizabeth, actually.
Okay. So that would be about grade 9. I'd be about 14, so about 64. Late 63, late 64. I remember seeing her on the bus once. The Dunbar bus. But, I didn't ask her.
You didn't ask her for an item.
I suspect it was fiction. But
yeah, I know. Like these rumors to make it sound mysterious. So, okay. Now, really what I would like to know about is your days at Bing and what it was like to grow up at that time in the hippie era.
Oh, that was a little later, okay.
Yeah, that was a little later.
So, Bing, well, I suppose the thing I was conscious of, most conscious of, yeah, I'm it's your speaker, it must be on. Do you have a speaker that can be turned off?
Which? Oh, can it? Where is it?
Do you have a switch that says speakers? Because if you can turn the speaker
off. I don't have a speaker, as far as I know.
Oh, so if you unplug the headphones, then it stops.
Right. Yeah, right.
Okay.
So, anyway, I just wanted to check, make sure we were still, what you said was, there was something about being in hippie era, you started to talk about hippie era and Bing.
Just before the hippie era and Bing. Oh, I know. Okay. Are we on?
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing I was most conscious of, being, of course, concerned with myself.
Yeah, right.
was my parents', economic status. Not so much economic status, as the gulf between what they saw as being culturally okay and what it seemed in North America was culturally okay.
Right.
I remember when I first arrived here, I came from a place with very little money. England, I mean, was devastated by the war. And, I mean, no one had any money. Like, I remember rationing, even.
Yeah.
I came here, and this all of a sudden was just lots of everything at sea. Mind you, it was kind of part of the time, but also partly where I grew up. And I grew up in the camp, nursing camp. And so I went to school with all the kids who lived there, of course. The camp and from the houses around it was the endowment houses. So the houses there tended to be pretty big. I had no idea this was not typical of Canada. This was Canada, for less concern.
Right.
Fine. So when my parents chose, of all the houses in Vancouver, the one they got,
yeah.
I couldn't believe my eyes. It's terrible. Why did they get a nice place on Marine Drive like everyone else had?
Right,
like,
they know. Yeah, right.
So, and of course, that feeling wasn't diminished by going to Southlands, because I could see on the hill, everyone else's house was nicer than my parents' place. Why did they get a real nice house like everyone else has?
Yeah.
Or if they can't get a nice house, get a decent car. So I was so pleased my parents finally ditched their blasted Morris Minor and got an American car. Unfortunately, my pleasure was short-lived. It was a 38 Plymouth. And I got it at the camp originally. It was just the last bit of the camp. Brought it over to the new house in 49th in Collingwood. And it's sort of like, I guess it had been like a green color one time. And the green had faded, and the paint had peeled off in the spots, so like splotchy. Lots of rust showing through the splotchy areas. It's a kind of piebald effect. And I was hideously embarrassed by it. So I thought, all right, we'll paint it. So it was gray house paint, and I helped him paint the car.
Oh, no kidding.
With a brush. It looked horrible. And then, of course, the battery wasn't very good. So instead of buying a new battery, I said, okay, I'll just park up in 47th. We can jump start on the way down.
Oh, yeah, right.
So that's what we did. And I remember... I remember being so embarrassed. I asked them not to drive me to school, just, you know, stop a couple blocks away. I was very self-conscious.
Yes, you were.
Oh, God. I'm glad I'm not young anymore. Anyway, that was the car. So, growing up at Bing, of course, you go through this entire tract of middle-class housing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even though my parents' house was middle-class, to me it looked like a dump. I always thought it was being done.
Yeah.
Partly because of the way they treated it, too, you know.
Oh.
And then, of course, those awful cars and all I had. Just a fleet of wrecks. I just didn't know how bad they were. Well, I remember helping him take, you know, like the Morris Minor pieces.
Yeah.
This would be a 99 or so. Helping him take the engine out so he could, just the head of the engine, I should say, so we could regrind So I helped him do that. We did it grounded by hand, I should say. Like I had a hand grinding to turn.
Oh,
to reset the remember the parks now.
Anyway. That's how Paul got interested in that.
It could be, because Paul was really young then, but he was not quite around the cars. Then he sold it to a guy who told us it was for his wife.
Oh,
of course, he was a dealer. He had a nice Mercedes-Benz 300.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
my.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So he came around and collected. That would be 59, and it took the car away. I'm somewhat digressing. Okay. So I wasn't too happy about inviting people back to my parents' place. Right. Long story short. So I was only too delighted to go to other people's places because get away from my parents' place. Also, my parents didn't like radio because I might listen to rock and roll. They didn't like TV for, I'm not sure exactly what specific reason. Now, I mean, even then I felt it very keenly, and now looking back on it, I'm a little bit baffled how they brought their own prejudices, should I say, to Canada. Like, they couldn't see what was so blindly obvious. Like, their idea of what's desirable, and, you know, what passes for sort of upper class in England, or upper middle class, should I say, doesn't really mean too much in North America. Unless it's accompanied by some material manifestation, should I say.
Right.
In other words, a nice looking house, or it doesn't mean you, but a nice looking house, or a nice car, or a nice piano, or a nice anything.
Mm-hmm.
But my parents weren't very materially oriented, I must admit. That's probably a good thing, but it made a huge difference to my feelings back then, should I say.
Yeah.
I felt hard done by.
Yeah.
There
you
are.
I know what you mean. The Elvis kid is right.
Yeah, no, mind you, that's just how I felt. I won't say I was. That's just how I felt.
Yeah.
So I guess I was keen to go to my friends' places and stay there overnight, like at the weekends, or overnight. I hardly ever just stay out of my place.
Oh.
But that changed, that feeling, though, in the, as you call it, the hippie era, meaning once I got out of the grade 12 out of school, because then it was more acceptable to be eccentric, shall we say.
Right.
At least there was a place for eccentrics, rather, which is acceptable. At least there's a place for them. And what was kind of nice about them, my parents' place then is precisely where it was so damn isolated, it was kind of a fun place to be. So I remember people staying right at my place, and we're speaking about, I guess it would be like grade 12. So that put it about 67. We stay overnight at my parents' place and go on the golf course. This is before any lights are up or anything. It's all dark. And what you could do is you could run, especially if you're a little drunk or something, you could run. And then you couldn't see anything. And all of a sudden, of course, there's the undulations, like the ground up and out.
Right.
You couldn't see them. So it'd be like a real, like being on an elevator by mistake.
Yeah.
You'd be like a real shock if your legs go underneath you or disappear.
Yeah, right.
So that was the use of the golf course, as far as I was concerned. Speaking of golf course, I did it. When I first moved in, for the first year or two, you could cut across, if you're pretty snappy, you could cut across from Blenheim to Collingwood, just straight across the course there.
Yeah.
As long as you can watch the golf balls. And then in the winters, like when there's actually snow, because there was snow a couple of years, but maybe 3 or 4 years there, that I can remember at least, starting around the clubhouse area, which would be around Marine Drive, there's a big steep hill, a fairly steep hill down to 49. So I'd take my sled, and a whole lot of kids do that, and go sliding down, it's kind of fun, actually. And I put even giant snowmen, you start a ball and roll all the way down.
Goodness.
The hill.
Oh,
a huge ball.
You couldn't even get
so
up on top of it.
Well, you couldn't even move that for a while.
No.
That big. I don't know what the golf course guys thought of it, but I guess they just thought, well, what the hell, no one's using it anyway.
Right.
And then, now you could also go, I guess it would be Dunmore. Okay, you can go over to west from Collingwood to Dunmore, that's right. Dunmore then heads south towards the river. And in those days, you go straight down to the river. So, because the golf course is like an L shape, that's what you're talking about. Okay. So you can cut across the L part right down to the river. And it's kind of nice. And occasionally you can find a golf ball. So that's kind of fun. I just remember, I like the phrase there, it's quite nice. It was absolutely, well, to me, wild. I don't know if it was or not, but it seemed wild. Lots of bulrushes. I just try to remember, I think there was a trail there. I think it became a pretty big trail, like later. I think the horse guys decided they wanted to have a riding trail around there. Well, it wasn't that I can remember, not originally horse trails.
Okay, where did we start? We started at Bing
in
the hippie
Bing.
Days.
Oh, yeah, Roy and Bing.
Right back to being
well,
your friends,
Bing.
Having
Sorry.
A great time on the, yeah, they were having a great time.
Ship to shore.
And we went on the...
Oh, and I remember, now this is a little later, not much later, same era.
Yeah.
64, 5, 6, I'm not precise about the number, probably 64. There was a flashlight put in at Courtney, maybe?
Courtney, yeah.
Courtney and 16.
Right.
And I remember there was a guy, there's a couple of guys driving along really fast, I guess, they were pretty drunk. And they ran over a girl.
Oh, yeah.
And they put light in there. And years later, my friend at that time, one of her good friends, was called Barbara Van Blankenstein.
Oh.
It was Barbara's daughter who they killed.
Oh, yeah.
They lived in West Ham at that time. They moved to West Ham, I should say, afterwards.
Oh.
So that would be about 1969.
Oh.
So, just interesting little side corner there. Okay, at Bing itself, this guy going Gunter, I don't remember his last name. He had a Harley Davidson, a nice red one.
Oh.
It must have been pretty ancient then. You know, barely ran, but he had it. And this is back before the helmet laws, so he had a Viking helmet instead.
Kind of
neat. Well, that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
Color, that's what it was.
Yes. Everybody is being different.
Well, different-ish. This would be still, this would be before the hippie days.
I see, okay.
So, I don't really, God, I went there for so long, but what do I remember, you know? I guess John Kennedy being killed.
Uh-huh.
I remember sort of being a little bit, that's not interesting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Curious. But it struck me as curious the same way that someone would bomb a church, you know? Kind of appalling.
Right. Have you started music? When did you start your band and all that?
Oh, okay. So I started playing guitar when I was 10, 1999.
Uh-huh.
And then my parents said, the best thing for you to do then, being them, is to take lessons. So of course I didn't play for a year, but I met a guy called Reg Clay. He was my teacher for that year.
Oh.
He had placed out on Marine, Northwest Marine, and Talmy, right on the corner. It was the corner house in those days.
Oh.
He built it himself. And this would be 1961, I guess, or 60, 61. I didn't really get along with him at all. I wanted to play rock and roll, and he didn't. So anyway, but looking back on it, I realized he must have been a pretty good guy, a pretty good player. I re-met him years later. I went back to see him and say hi. I said, hey, I'm the guy that didn't practice, but I can actually play now. He didn't remember me at all. But he remembered my mother.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
She made a big impression on people.
Oh, yeah.
Always has, I guess.
Yeah.
Reg Clay. Yeah, he was telling me some story. We were just sort of sitting around yarning. It must be 1970. And just for a few minutes, and he's telling me about something that happened a few years ago, describing someone taking his photograph and the flash camera went off and singed his eyebrows.
Oh.
So what I was thinking about that, he said a few years ago, he must have been pretty ancient, because a few years ago would have been like back in the 20s when they had flash cameras. Anyway. Bands. Okay, so I... grade 7 and 8, that's when I started really actually playing all the records I could hear from my friends' radios, because my parents would let me listen to the radio.
Right.
So, or buy records at the point. So I would listen to other people's radios at their houses, memorize the tunes, go home, figure out the guitar. Well, I guess it's a good practice.
Yeah, good practice.
And, I remember hearing, the rumble, Link Raised, the rumble, and Adventures tunes and stuff on these guys' videos. I was always into the instrumentals more than just the stuff with words, so the singing is okay too, but you didn't hear much guitar. So, then I started a campaign, probably when I was about 13, I wanted another guitar. Especially, I wanted an electric guitar.
Yes.
And in those days, you could go down to the, you know, I guess it'd be Granville, around,
almost the end here, just